Hello, world. Welcome to my show. And thank you for being here. I am your host and life coach, Janet Kaleri. I am in a silly mood today. It is Tuesday, May 6th, 2 o'clock on the West Coast. A beautiful day with the birds chirping. I know I say that every single time, but it's true. And we have a wonderful returning guest today who I will introduce in a few minutes. I'm so excited. So, Sight for Sound, life coaching. And life coaching with the twist. The twist is a documentation of your essence on the inside that shows up on the outside through the coaching process, because it is a process of self-discovery. And you become more confident and productive and have healthier relationships and communicate more effectively and, become more compassionate with yourself and others. And that shows up on the outside, the way that you stand, the way that you carry yourself. There's new life in your eyes. So I really enjoy capturing that before and after essence, because you become at a place in your life where you are willing to express yourself more. And what could be better than full self-expression? Nothing, I think. Anyway, my own opinion. My business name is Sight for Sound. Sight is when I see things as they clearly are. Sound is I make sound choices in life. Or at least I have more knowledge to make sound choices. Another way of saying it is the inner voice equals a healthy choice. So whatever works for you, take it and experiment with it. And let's see here. We have a wonderful returning guest today, Maitreya Zohar. He was a guest on my show back in August. And at that time, Maitreya was speaking about the message of his upcoming book called Sisterhood of the Dove, Clarion Call of Mary Magdalene. And I am very excited and proud to say that Maitreya is now a published author. That book is out, and I have it in my hands. And Maitreya is a channeler and a healer, a mentor, and a wonderful friend, a beautiful soul and spirit. He's also a psychic. When we were speaking last August about the book, the message of the book is releasing or rising above the fear, power, jealousy, and control that we all tend to have at times. And for me, it's by weaving the material world with the spiritual world. And the question today is, are you ready to release all of your fear and your jealousy and your power and control? As Maitreya says, it's easier than you think, and I agree with that one. It's about reawakening the dove within each of us. So, Sisterhood of the Dove. And I align with this dove aspect. I just love that bird. I always have, and I always thought maybe in my next lifetime I would be a dove, but maybe I already was. And for me, it represents innocence, gentleness, tenderness, peace. And as an idealist, that resonates for me very well. Oh, and before I forget, we encourage you to call in. If you're listening and you have something to say, to share, to ask, please call in. You can find the numbers on the website, thebbsradio.com/sightforsound, and here they are, 877-876-5227. In the U.S. and Canada, 888-815-9756. And the local number, 530-876-3222. So in 2003, Mary Magdalene, because this is a clarion call of Mary Magdalene, she channeled through Shoshana Ortelia Rogers, providing this wonderful author, Maitreya, an inspiration for this story. So yes, you heard it correctly, that this book was channeled. And that is how Maitreya created it and how it has come today to be a physical manifestation of a book with a beautiful photo on the front. And I'll give you a little bit of intro on the book, and then I'm going to bring in Mr. Maitreya Zohar. The tale begins at the Temple of Isis in Ephesus. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Rachel tells the initiates of her mother's life, sharing her childhood, her sacred union and travels with Jesus, the goddess teachings, her grief over the loss of her beloved, and her commitment to honor the divine feminine and create a secret society to preserve the teachings. The story of Sisterhood of the Dove is connected with a group of 22, which is my favorite number, by the way, who incarnated to raise the consciousness of humankind, offering the opportunity to live without fear or jealousy. These teachings provide the keys to freedom and liberation. The choice to accept them is yours, because you have choice in every single moment, and you get to re-choose again whenever you feel like it. Remember that. That is a key to freedom right there. So again, the question is, are you ready to transform? And here is newly published author, Mr. Maitreya Zohar. Hello.
Hello. Thank you, Janet.
You're welcome. How are you?
I am well. Great to be a guest again.
Yay!
Yeah.
Maitreya, would you turn up the volume on your voice just a bit for us?
I will.
There you go.
When I get into that altered state, my voice tends to get quieter, so I...
It does.
So I will remember that. Sorry about that.
That is okay. Well, first I want to congratulate you on publishing this book. And I know it came to you a few years ago, and when we talked last August, you were in the midst of it, and you had it finally published. I believe it was it in April?
It actually came out in March, but
oh.
I didn't start getting it to the public until April.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a few months for things to, or weeks for things to go through the system after it's published, and get into the wholesaler's hands.
Sure. And how was that for you in terms of writing and self-publishing and going through the process? Was that a good experience for you?
On the whole, yes, it's a good experience. I had to go through every one of those things through fear, through competition, through jealousy, through my own personal issues with power, through my own control dramas, And so writing the book from 2003 has been a journey of healing a lot of that stuff, or at least elevating myself continually up the ladder around those issues to really embrace the dove so I could transmit that through the book. So it's been quite a journey, and somewhere in 2005, I really let fear get the better of me. And I started getting afraid of what the public would think. It's a bit of a controversial subject.
Yeah.
And I just stopped for a couple of years, and I didn't do anything with it. Fear just had me. And I realized it, went to a healer to work out some things around it, and had some very wonderful friends really kick me in the butt to say, this has to get out into the world. So even now, I'm healing myself on the next level as people are reading it, healing my approval, my disapproval, whether I take things personally about their feedback, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some people upset, some people loving it so much, and me learning to hold my center and just be at peace either way.
Woo!
Yeah.
The back and forth conflict. Do I care what others think? Yes, I do. No, I don't. Yes, I do. No,
right.
I don't.
And I really feel the energy of the dove. And there's a line in the book where Mary talks about the energy of the dove having the ability to heal with no blemish or no scar. So imagine, like, when we cut our bodies, we usually heal with a scar.
Yeah.
And so as we go on with life, we often feel that we have these flaws or these scars in us that never fully heal because there's a sign or a remnant. And the energy of the dove, the Holy Spirit, that frequency, call it what you want, in symbology, I use the dove in the book, is healing completely, 100%. It's absolute. And when you look up the word absolute, it's a very powerful word, which is like no blemish, no scar. And that's something that when it was presented to me in 2003, I couldn't even really comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 5 years later, I can comprehend it. I still need to step into it. But as I distribute the book and I'm contacting places, I am still in the process of healing that. And there's a saying, we teach best what we need to learn most.
Oh, yeah.
So here I am just doing it. We're risking it. And the biggest risk I've had so far was getting my mother, father, and grandmother to read the book.
Ooh, up close and personal.
Yeah, so really providing an access to transform my past. And as my dad kind of lovingly, kind of sarcastically said, you wrote a book? as a kid from growing up very challenged in the school system, I don't think anybody in my family saw that I would write a book, let alone me.
Surprise, surprise.
So even in that, I had to overcome my own self-doubts, my own... That's part of the power and control issue of who I thought I was in order to just free myself and do what the energy of the goddess was calling me to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you share a little bit about the book? Well, we know that it was channeled through Shoshana, et cetera, and... share with the audience what the book is about, and then I would love to go back to talking more about specific pieces of it, and you know, the scar and the healing and your process of going through it. And,
yeah.
So let's start with giving the audience a good picture of what the book is.
Well, in 2003, I attended a meeting where Mary Magdalene came through Ortelia, and allowed us to ask all kinds of questions from that time in her life, 2,000 years ago or so. And it really shocked me, because usually when the guides come through, and I've been doing this work for 20 years, usually when the guides come through, they don't usually want to talk about their past lives. They'd rather serve people in evolving their own life in this life. And so it was an odd night in that she wanted to talk about herself and have us ask questions about that. And so I knew it was unique.
Mm-hmm.
And the following day, the words Sisterhood of the Dove rang in my head. And I knew that it was a book. I just didn't know exactly what book. And it became clear over about a three-day period that I would ask for another channeling. And at the time, Mary said to me, I want you to write my story. And she was asked, or I asked her, you know, there's so many books out there, why another one? Like, there's so many different versions, so many people believe different things. And she was saying, don't worry about that. Or I'm paraphrasing, but don't worry about that. This is the book I want you to write. And something just impacted me in that moment, that it didn't matter what version was out there, that there was a message that was to come through, and she wanted to communicate it through me and through Ortelia. So Ortelia channeled. I recorded those channelings, and what I was left with was a skeleton, if you will. And my creative writing skill just put on the flesh of the body, if you will, and some nice clothes and put on some makeup, and we now have a story. And that story follows the life of 22 souls that had come to Earth previously in the time of Nefertiti, and they were back again at that time, in the time of Jesus and the disciples, and they came to reawaken the energy of the Holy Spirit, or the dove, in the consciousness of humankind. And so there was a concept in Judaism that the people were waiting for their Messiah to return.
Sure.
And we have this in different religions too. In Buddhism, they're waiting for the Buddha Maitreya to return. And in Judaism, there's Moshe, or the Messiah, and Christianity has once the second coming of Jesus. And so what this book presents is that it was not one person that came as the Messiah consciousness. It was actually 22 beings that came as the Messiah consciousness.
And is there a significance to 22?
There is. And I don't fully know it. What really transpired, since you asked that question, according to the channeling, in the time of Egypt, at the time of Queen Nefertiti and King Akhenaten, 44 souls chose to bring that consciousness forth. And they did for a brief time before an Egyptian went to one god and then returned back to many gods after Nefertiti and Akhenaten were killed. So there was 44 souls, and and they lost their way for a while in the density of Earth. So 1,400 years later, or approximately, the 22 souls came, and 22 souls remained as oversouls, if you will, constantly guiding the 22 that incarnated. So there's this 22 effect and this 44 effect, and all. I do not know specifically what they are, but it is a vibrational frequency that wakes people up, for lack of better words, calls their mission forth, calls their service into action in the master numbers.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's why July 22nd, is July 22nd always the feast day of Mary Magdalene? It's right here in the book. I opened up to it.
Right. Well, according to whoever makes up those sort of Catholic or Christian saints days, if you will, for lack mm-hmm. of better words. I don't exactly know what they call them, but yes. So every year, July 22nd is the feast day of Mary Magdalene.
Interesting.
And then on the following day, July 23rd, we celebrate the helical rising of the planet Sirius, which is significant because eons ago there were no calendars. And the one constant in the world from anywhere on the planet was the star Sirius rising just before the sun at a certain point in time, which is now at approximately July 23rd.
That's awesome.
So you remember the movie Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Or the Raiders of the Lost Ark? And he's mm-hmm. lining up that pyramid to catch the sun. And I think in the movie, it's for the summer solstice. But I actually believe that that was drawn from the ancient times of Egypt when the sun would rise, and they were really trying to get Sirius to go through that star and align all the sacred sites around the world.
Mm.
The reason that is important is because Sirius cascades unconditional love onto the planet once a year at that time.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah. That's very nice. One thing that I had a few things that I wanted when I was writing is, one, I wanted a quick read. I don't read a lot, and I know people have very busy lives, and to get into a big, long book, that's not something I wanted. So my focus was to make a story rather than a biography or an autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
Make an adventure story that weaved the teachings of the 22 throughout it, focused primarily on Mary Magdalene's life as it was affected by Jesus, as it was affected by their children, the disciples, and I was focusing on how do I write that, and what came to me was to write it through the eyes of one of Mary and Jesus' children, and her name was Rachel.
Rachel, the storyteller.
Yes, the storyteller. So she tells the story of her mother's life, her father's life, the plan to bring unconditional love to the world through the symbolic energies of the dove, the sisterhood, how they created a sisterhood.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the effects that the book is designed to do is to wake up the soul fragments currently living now of people that were there at that time being touched by the 22. Did that make sense?
It makes sense to me.
So it's a real call to a wake up, and I've been getting some wonderful feedback about that. I just talked to someone yesterday. I said, "How did you enjoy the book?" And she said, "Well, I read it in 2 days." And I said, "What did you think?" And I really didn't know whether she was going to be positive or negative. And she said, "These are thoughts I've been having for the last 30 years.
Wow.
She said, "There's some new things in there, but it just was, ever since I read stuff back in the 70s, she said. And so I was actually shocked because I didn't know if she was going to be enrolled in the message or not. My mother gave a reasonable feedback as well. She didn't understand a lot of the terminology I used in it, but she felt it got the point across very well of healing fear, healing jealousy, power, and control.
Wonderful. And you do have an index in the back.
Yes. Yes.
Like a little dictionary there for people. And you say in your book that it was written with many layers of text to speak to the reader who is interested in hearing it as, like a tale that would be told to children. So that's Rachel, the storyteller, who does such a wonderful job. And then you wrote it also in a way for the reader who is interested in knowledge and in evolving the soul. And what you say is the reader who absorbs its many layers will be transformed by the energy of the dove. And then you go on to say that you recommend, so this is interesting to me is you recommend reading tale three times and then have someone read it to you once.
Yes.
So I would love to hear more about that.
Sure. What I've been taught as a student by some of my teachers is that our humanness rarely takes things in on the first time. And
mm-hmm.
you can read this book once, and it can just be a wonderful story. Or you can go a little deeper, and it can be some awarenesses and insights for you. Or you can go deeper still and have it really transform your life. So on the first read, oftentimes our mental body's involved. We're kind of judging it and saying, this doesn't make sense. Or we've been so conditioned by maybe the Bible or by our religious or lack of religious beliefs or something, that the first read might just confront all that stuff in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
The second read then starts to bring it more into the emotional body. Then you start to have an emotional experience and begin to really clean up what you believe, or really examine what you believe in. And if you totally don't agree with the book, well, then you'll grow a deeper faith in what you believe, which is fine by me. And because,
mm-hmm.
you know, a strong faith in something is wonderful. And if it's not this, then I serve to deepen your faith in what you do believe. And if part is ready to shift into what's been written here, then that's good too. And so it'll challenge some of your existing beliefs in the emotional world. And the third reading really anchors it into your physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And in creating a paradigm shift, this is what we want. We want the cells of your being to be infused with the dove. And I've noticed some people have read it once and really flowed through it very fast. And I've been recommending them to read it a second time because they come to me and say, well, I'll get to the second reading in a little bit. And they come and they say, my life has gotten a little more crazy since I read your book. And I go, well, you know, stuff is being worked out. You're being transformed. Keep
mm-hmm.
going. It's kind of like you started, keep going, and really change your paradigm. Because regardless of the words, the energy of the dove is filling up yourself.
Indeed.
Getting it read to you is something we don't often get done anymore. Like when we were little kids, we had stories read to us, or many of us did, not everybody. And there's a soothing quality for our inner child. There's a difference between reading it and listening. We activate our listening mode and get into receiving differently than us having to bring the knowledge to us. We now get to receive it as it's transmitted. And I'm now in process with actually putting the book on CD, so that will make it easier to have the book read to people.
And when one reads it three times, is it recommended that they do that within a certain period of time?
I can't say how fast one should read it.
Okay.
Because I think if you read it too fast, you could be just doing it in order to get to the end. So you could actually be operating from fear. Well, I don't want something bad to happen to me, so I'll read it really fast three times.
Uh-huh.
And that would miss the point of what I'm saying.
Sure.
So it would mean hooking into your own flow and rereading it and reading it at a proper pace. One thing I attempted to do by chapter was many of the chapters run from sort of from the morning till the night of a single day. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you'd have to read a chapter a day, but that's one way one could do it till they're complete. Or they could make that lesson of each chapter last a day, last 3 days, some type of integration period. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Find your inner rhythm. That's what the goddess is all about. Finding your inner rhythm, which is authentic to you.
Feels good.
Feels good.
Feels right.
Because sometimes we push ourselves to grow too fast, and sometimes we procrastinate, and we stay in our misery a little longer than we need to.
Mm-hmm. So in chapter one, you call the Advent, and I'd like to read just a little piece from that, if that's okay with you.
Please.
Chapter one, Advent. Rachel had been full of defiance upon her arrival in the city of
Ephesus,
okay, as a young girl. She had never wanted to leave Judah, but her mother, Miriam, had offered no choice. Now, standing on the top step of the temple erected by her mother, grandmother, and others who had come before her, she felt a joy beyond words. Rachel was in her late 40s, almost 40 harvests, which the sisters called festivals, had passed since her uncle Joseph's boat had docked upon the shores of Anatolia. She had grown under the watchful eye of the goddess Isis, and 30 festivals ago had accepted her role as the priestess of storytelling. Rachel watched as the last of the women and children entered the temple. The servants guided them to their rightful places. It was initiation time again, an event which happened once a festival. Her heart filled with the love of the goddess, and she was reminded of the master plan for which she had volunteered. "Thank you," came from her lips as she descended the temple stairs, walked across the grass, and came to the area she had prepared to tell the story. So when I read this for the second time, just this one piece, what was coming up for me is she was at this moment that she, to me, just surpassed another level of rising above fear, control, power, and jealousy. And that's my own interpretation. And I would enjoy hearing your thoughts on that little part of the book.
Well, I think it's good because in that everybody will get something different from it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can honestly say I actually never thought about that. But I imagine many, many passages will have people doing that.
Sure.
And what the space that I was in the most when I wrote that was gratitude.
Well, that makes sense.
She has surveyed herself for 30 years telling this story and how many people she served, and she's still grateful 30 years later to be doing this job. And
well, how many people out there after 30 years of doing a job are still grateful for it, or have become grateful for it, or are even more grateful for it? That would be an interesting survey.
And that's part of what this book is to accomplish. Not that people necessarily be happy or unhappy with their job, but to wake them up that if they're in a job that they're unhappy with, then they accept the healing presence. And they reframe themselves. Like you said at the beginning, you have a choice in every moment. In every moment. And so this is her choice every moment that she gets to go to this celebration. For them, it would be like some people doing Christmas or some people doing Passover or Easter.
Mm-hmm.
This is, in the book, their highest celebration time, the time of harvest, and honoring the goddess ways.
Mm-hmm.
I've been blessed to have two careers this life, and maybe now writing is a third.
Indeed.
And now it's officially out there as a book. It's not just a hobby. And I've been blessed to hold for over 25 years different jobs that I've always loved. And I really took that for granted until I started looking at different things and getting in touch with other people that not everybody has chosen that like I have.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have my own karmas of challenge in other areas, but choosing the job I love has not been one of them.
Uh-huh. And is it now for you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is. That doesn't mean, however, though, in this job that I love, that there aren't aspects that push me. I took a course, a weekend seminar a few years back, and the man said, if you're not growing, you're dying. And
mm-hmm.
like in nature, if a plant isn't growing, it's dying. So
mm-hmm.
just
and it's not about, you know, it's not about fixing ourselves and something's wrong and all that. It's about, for me, it's about when I'm growing, I'm discovering more of myself. And I have more information to look at myself and to use that information in life, in how I interact with others, how I think about things, if I react or respond, and the choices I make.
Well said. There's a part in the book where Jesus reminds the disciples, and when I say the disciples, most people will hear that his 12, what I call brothers in the book, his 12 brothers, and I don't even call them disciples, they're like apostles, and
mm-hmm.
because I think the word disciple came after he left, personally, ascended, and
mm-hmm.
now I lost my thought. So he says to the disciples, which include men and women, and children actually, that he reminds them, we have not come here to change anybody. We have not come here to take away their religion, and he's referring to Judaism. We did not come here to fix anyone. All we came here to do, and the we being the 22, is what we came here to do is offer them something to add to them, the Holy Spirit to add to them. The dove adds on to what they already believe.
Adding on to the quality of their life.
Correct. With that, and a lot of people at the time got afraid that he was trying to take something away from them.
Mm.
Asking them to give up their rituals. And what he was saying is, at least as I write it in the book, keep your rituals and add this to them. It'll make them even more powerful. Now, that's my interpretation.
I just want to say, and it's all an experiment.
Yes.
You know, when you and I spoke in August, the topic that of the show was Anicca, which is the law of nature, which is impermanence. And I bring it up again. I bring it up a lot because in terms of rising above fear and all this, you know, that adding on to the quality of one's life and having a greater sense of freedom, which is less anxiety and worry and doubt, doing that, you know, just experimenting. So add this on and experiment with it. And if it works, great, run with it. If it doesn't, that's okay.
Yeah, it'll be one more thing, you know, doesn't work and getting you on your way to the next thing that does. We tend to learn through trial and error, don't we?
We do, and I think that your book displays relatively often the experimentation of, you know, what worked and what didn't work.
Thank you.
What is, first I just want to remind the caller, the listeners, if you want to call in and share your thoughts or ask any questions, if you are ready to release all of your fear and jealousy and power and control, or at least talk about it, call us at 877-876-5227, 888-815-9755 five, six, maybe you're just right at the top of that mountain. And you're like, or you're sitting on the fence. You're not sure which way to go, but you're, you think you're ready. Give us a call.
Yeah, I'd like to say that the book is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and it can also be ordered through bookstores. And my intention is to actually have it in bookstores, and that's what I'm doing right now, facing my fears of going around and asking people for support.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a big issue of mine over my lifetime to ask. And so now I'm working out my false humility, which is tied up in power, and working out my fear around asking people, you know, will you read this and consider having it in your store? So the lessons are still going on.
And when you walk into those stores, you are coming from a place of what value you have to offer people, which is the intention of this book, to rise above, you know, the fear and jealousy control of power, to reawaken the dove. And I'm actually curious if when you're walking into a store, if you're thinking about that, and if so, does that calm you down?
Well, what I was actually thinking about the last time, it happened about a week ago, is I was thinking, I walked in very nervous and scared. I was definitely a little boy, and I walked out again without talking to the people, and I said, who I'm being is not someone that is going to get a yes.
Yeah.
Who I'm being is someone that's going to create trouble. And so I went and I meditated for half an hour and processed through my stuff and elevated myself into being a yes person, that who I am. And even if they said no, I was still a yes person.
Yeah.
You know, do you get that? Didn't really matter what they said. It mattered that I went in as a yes person and presented it from that place. And so
Wonderful. I
met up with my new created future, which was for them to say yes. I'll take a look at it. He gave me a business card, and he said he'd consider after reading it to hold it in the store or not. And I walked out saying, he's going to say yes.
Yes, and?
And how do I get this? Yeah.
Well, I believe that when we're about to create an agreement with somebody, as my mentor and friend Noel Murphy calls it, an agreement creation rather than a sales pitch. And I think when we approach it from the top of the mountain, you know, we're shouting from the top of the mountain, excited about our product or our service and holding the intention of it and what the value of it is going to bring society, and there's no shame in being excited about it, that really has a greater possibility of a yes as well.
I hear you. I also tend to like to be in the back, if you will, or unnoticed. And this book is calling me to face fame in a balanced and centered way. Now, do I know whether I will have fame or not? I don't know. But I need to face it anyways within myself.
Mm-hmm.
And doing this show, I was sending out emails, and the issue of control came up because just as I sent the first email, my computer crashed. All the electrical stuff went crazy, and I completely out of control. And I tried and tried and tried and tried. I reconnected. I did whatever I could to make it work, and it wasn't happening. Apparently, about half the emails went out that I intended to send, and I had to just offer it up to the goddess or God or the divine power, whatever you want to call that, and say, who tunes in today will tune in today.
So you relinquished.
Yes. I got upset first, I have to say.
Sure.
But did not last long. in the old days, it used to last hours. Now it lasts minutes or...
It used to last weeks for me.
Quarters. Yeah, I hear that too. That's part of what I'd like to communicate is when we say, are you ready to transform with the book, it can be all at once, completely gone, or it could be a stepping stone process, a little farther along the journey where some place you used to be, somebody used to disempower you, let's say, or you allowed yourself to be disempowered by them for 3 days, and you know, as you grow and evolve, it maybe becomes a day, and then you continue to grow, and it becomes an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then ideally, I would like to get it, for me, to the place of one breath.
One breath of position release, releasing
yes.
your position.
Exactly.
Which reminds me of when the idea of rising above fear and jealousy, control and power, it's not that. So I'm a human being, and fear, let's just use fear, is it's part of me. It's part of being a human.
Right.
And control. And what the message of this book, in terms of rising above it all and this absolute healing, is your message that it just completely all goes away and one can actually have no fear at all? Or is it about, all right, we're human and intrinsically we have a little bit of fear and it's our friend and it comes up to show us, you know, the light side as opposed to the fear, the dark side. So is this saying that the fear is going to absolutely go away forever and ever, or is it about supporting us, the reader, in dealing with fear?
It's both.
Uh-huh.
In part of the many layers of text, can have one really use the ascension of the one we know as Jesus, and we all have that capability because we are made in the image and likeness of God or the likeness of the Father or however that quote went.
Mm-hmm.
The spark of God is within us. And it's also, until we evolve to that place, we do it moment by moment by moment, when really all there is the moment anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe from writing the book, and I'm not at that place, but I tap that place by writing the characters that energy flowed through me. And when I say the characters, I mean the characters of the story. I accessed somehow a frequency of each of the 22. And
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was. And as an example of writing the part where Jesus was on the cross, my heart was breaking, and I was in so much agony. It's kind of, I don't know what he felt, but I felt just a hair's worth of a human head of hair of what that might have felt like as I was writing it, and really couldn't even write. I had to stop. I was bawling so much. and had to go back to it. So there were these experiences in the book of touching the greatness of the suffering, and then when it comes time for his ascension, of touching the greatness of his ascension, and then what Mary went through to watch that, and then basically not stop her life. She goes on and lives for basically another 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the exact numbers of the book, but I think she lives for almost 50 years after Jesus died, going around teaching. And creating the Sisterhood of the Dove was one thing that she did while she was teaching.
And what is a clarion call?
I had to look that up. because I didn't know exactly myself. But the clarion, as I understand it, is part of a trumpet.
And
it's very connected with trumpeting or sounding a global call to action or global call to service. So it's often used with archangels, like you'll see Archangel Gabriel with the trumpet, or different angels with the trumpet to sound something. It could also be used by presidents of countries to activate and call the country into action. And so that's my understanding of that. And I'm also open to being educated on that, too.
Well, I am as well.
So Mary's making a call, but not just a call. She's making a world global sounding call to reawaken these energies on the planet right now, because we have on the planet huge fears and anxieties and control issues and competition issues with our neighbor, jealousy. And a lot of people are taking self-empowerment workshops or feeling disempowered in their various relationships. And so this is not so much a how-to book of how to do it. It's more of an energetic transmission that infuses the being and wakes up that part of them to go forth in love and in service.
It's about an internalization.
Yeah, it's about a waking up.
Which really happens in that third read when
it'll be happening all along.
Yeah, okay.
It'll be happening all along. Because some people may get it on the first read. You know, some people, because they that's just the way they are, or some people may need to read it 10 times. I don't know. But I just gave a general guideline. There's a saying that humans learn through impact or repetition. Have you ever heard that?
Yes, impact or repetition.
Yeah, so most humans, myself included, learn through repetition. We need to be told something several times before we get it. And so that's why I put that suggested guideline.
It's wonderful. So we have a couple of minutes left, Maitreya, and I would like to open it to you. If you have anything specific you want to share about the book or about the topic of the book or anything.
I would like to say that there's not really a sequel to this book, and yet there's a very profound sequel in that we, as a human body, are living the sequel.
Mm.
And so the clarion call is to wake up ourselves to the energy of unconditional love and to what we're divinely here for and live that mission. And we see that type of thing happening a lot, where different people are with the movie The Secret. They're calling people into action to really serve themselves and get what they want and to serve others. And so maybe in 1,000 years there'll be a book about this time where we came again and made a transformational shift on the planet.
I like that. As a human body, we are the living sequel.
Yes.
Ah.
I really hope that comes across in the book, because that's what I intend, that when people wake up, they'll be called to their own service. That could be a ministry, that could be to invent something, that could be just to be more loving in their families. But in some way, there's no wrong service, because when you're aligned to that path, the path of spreading love, the path of spreading peace, harmony, joy, give it what adjective you want, if that's an adjective, maybe they're nouns. then we become the living sequel to this book. And so if ever there's a part to go with this book, it's actually a prequel.
Very good. Very good. Well, folks out there, I highly recommend this book. And I encourage you to go to Amazon. You can go to, what was the other bookstore? I'm blanking out.
BarnesandNoble.com.
BarnesandNobles.com.
You can actually just put it into a search engine and things will start to come up.
Sisterhood of the Dove.
Put it
in a search engine and it'll come up. And OutskirtsPress.com.
Right.
Which is your self-publishing company.
Yeah.
And, well, I'm really excited for you, Maitreya, and I have a whole different perspective on the book and why you wrote it, and I'm excited to start reading it for the second time today.
Well, you know, we say I wrote it, and I really felt like it wrote me.
Yeah.
And when we're doing our service, or we get, like, something got woken up to me inside me in 2000, and so when I'm saying about waking up, that was a situation where I just caught a glimpse. I had a name of a title in my head. There was just this seed, and I could have just squashed it, done nothing with it. Instead, I decided to follow it, and it became this magnificent journey. And so
indeed,
I encourage people,
it is.
Yeah, to follow those little seeds that pop up, because they could be things that they're definitely here to do, and how to transform and heal the world.
Thank you so much for being here and sharing your wisdom and your creativity. And
you're welcome.
Thank you, Don and Seth, the producers of BBS Radio as well. And Maitreya, we'll be seeing you online.
Thank you.
And until next time, folks, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.